Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Hi, this is Charles Maxwell Green, and I'm the host of
ETYoga.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. Lots of interesting things to talk about this evening. I am at the U.S. Psychotronics Expo, which is a conference of scientists and metaphysicians, and where the theme of the group is bringing together of science and metaphysics, not necessarily in that order, and it's dealing with all the issues that we talk about regularly on this show. We're going to have some featured guests, George Norrie, the host of the Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie radio show is going to be a featured speaker this weekend. And so I'm rather excited about some of what I'm about to hear. Tons and tons of books, many books on ufology and consciousness and even animals. In fact, I had a chance to meet a group of four chihuahuas that are in sort of a retaining cage. And they're upset about certain people that are walking by. I think they're able to sniff out the government agents. Anyway, I asked for permission to approach the animals and got a very interesting response from them. I predicted that they would be licking my finger within a couple of seconds, and they did just that. It was pretty amazing. These dogs were going crazy over the strangers. And they went right to sleep. Actually, it was very, very interesting just to see the different types of energy. Very interesting products coming out that are going to be made available. And I'm hoping to be able to connect and network with some of the exhibitors at this event for the purpose of introducing you to some very exciting health-related products that have hit the marketplace, and you will be in a position to make certain types of decisions that will empower you. It's just amazing some of the technology that I'm seeing, and believe it or not, people are quite excited to find out that I'm a talk show host. And we have a whole new roster of guests that we're going to add to the show in the coming months, and lots of interesting topics along the same lines, but some very different slants. I had the opportunity today to meet Bill Sweet, who has been on George Norrie's show and on many, many shows, even on BBS Radio. And so he was excited to talk to me, and I'm now reading his book and preparing myself for an interview. So this is a pretty exciting day for me on this 18th of July, 19th if you're on the East Coast. And with that, we're going to bring tonight's guest into the conversation. He himself is a scientist, a prolific inventor. He is an author, a lecturer, and a teacher, and his name is Jim Murray. Jim, welcome back to Evident Footprints. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, Don, and it's good to be here with you. How are things in Chicago?
Very, very nice. I had a kind of a hectic day because my room was like an oven, and it took a while to free up another room, but I'm back in the air conditioning now, and I can breathe and settle down. And I'm doing the show on the phone tonight, which is a rarity for me. But in fact, I'm hoping Nicholas can turn your volume up just a little bit so I can hear you a little louder on my end. Other than that, I'm doing great today. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing fine, but it's interesting that you're in Chicago. Chicago is one of my favorite cities, and I don't know exactly why, except maybe because of where it's located. I'm so fond of the Great Lakes. As you know, I lived in northern Michigan for many years, and actually I was over on Lake Huron, but nonetheless, it's a related body of water. And the other thing that I love about Chicago, the people are really cool. The food is out of this world. I honestly think the food in Chicago is better than the food in New York. I don't care what anybody says. And the other thing that I adore is the fact that they have left their elevated railroads in operational condition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that they tore the ones down in New York, but those are just some of the things I like about Chicago. I got a lot of friends there, and there's some great museums there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a cool place, my friend.
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends here too. Problem is, today I was so preoccupied with just trying to get comfortable, and I have to say, despite the problems, the hotel staff were very, very gracious. And they were in an uncomfortable situation because the hotel is completely booked up. And, I think they held a gun to someone's head or something. they were able to free up a room. And I actually got a room upgrade. So it's made up for the inconvenience. But, the day, began not so well. Let's put it that way.
Well, how hot is it up there that you're uncomfortable?
Well, you know, it was in the high 80s today, maybe low 90s, but inside the building, the air conditioning was just blowing hot air, so it felt like a furnace in the middle of winter. And I'm well done. Let's put it that way. So inside the building, I would say it had to be 110, 120. And with no air circulation, that's pretty stifling, you know, inside.
Well, I'm glad that they didn't overcook you. That way we can at least have a show together.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, you're right about the food. I had absolutely an incredible dinner tonight, and it was very reasonably priced. The service was excellent, and I was really floored by the quality of the food. Right
here.
Well,
I'm glad you concur with that. I have a fantasy which I will share with you. I have been dying for many years to take the train from Los Angeles to Chicago and back.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be an exquisite ride. First of all, I love trains, as you already know. And second of all, I can't think of a cooler place to wind up than Chicago. It would just be so neat to conclude that journey with a wonderful meal and an interesting restaurant and then get to relax in a good, high-quality hotel. So one of these days, Don, maybe we'll do a show from a moving train. How's that?
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Now we have to get somebody to cover the roaming charges, you know.
Well, I'm sure we can find somebody.
Yeah. What's really interesting, Jim, to me is I'm seeing a lot of the books that have been discussed on the Evident Footprint show, in these exhibits. There is a massive amount of information, and I'm going to be spending quite a bit of time tomorrow, starting early in the morning, just going over all of, what these folks have brought in their catalog. The books are for sale right here. It's not an order situation unless they have sold out. And just an incredible variety of quality authors and quality topics. And I had a brief opportunity to thumb through a few of them, and I'm quite impressed with a lot of writing out there that you just don't see unless you are involved in an event like this. I had, by the way, the opportunity while I was coming up here to listen to George Norrie's show, and he was interviewing gentleman whose name is escaping me, David Bloom. Now, David Bloom has been talking about sustainability concepts and renewable energy, and he's very much into the agricultural aspect of that. And there was a discussion about Brown's gas. And evidently, George had described that he and one of his people affiliated with the show had built a unit, and it hadn't worked. And I knew they did something wrong. In fact, they were describing what they did. They were describing the whole process of Brown's gas. Now, you had done a rather lengthy presentation on the whole concept, including on Brown himself and his involvement overseas with other countries implementing this technology. And I'm going to have the opportunity, let's just put it this way, I'm going to have the opportunity to talk to George about that and let him know that they had to have done something wrong. I know that you are involved in a couple of other projects that are along those lines and are producing excellent results. And I heard that their test results were -30% efficiency. So something had to have been wrong in how they were told to do that whole process. George wasn't here today yet, but he's supposed to be here tomorrow all day and Sunday. So I should have an opportunity to bend his ear for a couple of moments.
Well, if I can be of any assistance, let me know. As you know, I worked for 3 years with Dr. Brown before his untimely death, and we did a lot of interesting experiments, not only he and myself, but also other people that were alive and participating in those days. Unfortunately, some of them have since died also. But I agree with you 100% that the Brown's gas phenomenon is something which needs to be investigated much more thoroughly, and I still feel that it holds an enormous amount of promise. And like so many other things, Don, unfortunately, it has been, I won't use the word suppressed simply because it's not quite true, but let's just say that the authorities who could really make something happen with it have turned their heads the other way, and the people who, you know, could provide some kind of funding for these ventures have not been very cooperative. But in the true spirit of scientific adventure and exploration, an awful lot of individuals have taken it upon themselves to just do the work best they can and fund it out of pocket. And that's the American spirit that's worthy of a great deal of attention and praise, as you know.
One thing I noticed too, and this is not to change the subject. I've just got I've had this opportunity to run into all these folks who are actually, they were all actually trying to help me settle my problem. And I said, well, unfortunately, we can't do this. We're not in the hotel business. Basically, we don't own this hotel, but in the process of everybody seeing this attention that was being lavished in my direction to get me situated, and I'm just one of many people here, but these people gravitate toward the energy or toward the space that's demanding healing, let's say, This is a recurring thing that I'm seeing with all the folks here. And in the process of working through this, the folks are talking, and I'm finding that many people are bringing up the very same issues that I routinely bring up on the Evident Footprint show. Now, many of these people haven't heard my show. Some have read my work. A few have. It's amazing when you hear them speak, when they start, letting their heartstrings get tugged in the conversation, they inevitably will talk about all the corruption that's going on and all the issues behind, you use the word suppression. Maybe it's the compartmentalization might be a way to describe it, that there's an advance in technology and it's used for a particular purpose and it's withheld from the people until the corporations have an opportunity to manufacture some kind of a product using a basic form of the technology that can be ramped up in segments over a period of 10 or 20 years until they're ready to again go back and bring out something new. Meanwhile, the covert technology that we're paying for, that we actually have a right to be made available to us merely because it's being paid with tax dollars, is ramping up higher and higher and higher as the years go on. And because they're holding back this technology from us in a very short period of time, they're able to get ahead of us by years. We think that we come out, we get some new kind of processor in a computer, for example, and we think it's great because it's running a half a gigabyte faster than the last version that came out 2 or 3 years prior. And it's nowhere near the speed at which they're using these technologies in other ways. Yet the development and the production, the testing and the creation of all of these modalities is funded by us. And I know that from your perspective as a scientist, that's got to be very frustrating at times to know that level of research and development is going on, and that what we are allowed to experience in our reality is so much less than that, or so much lower in frequency, to use that term. Any comments on that?
Oh, absolutely. It's extraordinarily frustrating, and it has been over the years. As a matter of fact, I was telling somebody not too long ago in a private luncheon that I have attended about my own work, that if I had had ample funding and the wherewithal to follow the leads that the research itself had exposed over the years, I could very probably have concluded and presented the world with a lot of interesting products a long time ago. And it's unfortunate that the very people that control the money in the world are also the same people who make the decisions about what's going to go and what isn't going to go, because they're the ones who can actually turn thumbs down on a project. And once they do that, unless you have a rich uncle or somebody who helps you fund it privately, it's not going anywhere. And I've told you on your show so many times how often we've run into that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And not only me either, but the other folks that I know who are in similar or parallel fields of endeavor who've experienced all kinds of things to that effect. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yes. Well, you know, my description of my experience so far, and keep in mind that I've really not gotten into the nitty-gritty of as to what this event really represents and what's going to transpire this weekend. But you and I, in a very natural, fluid way, I think this is something we've developed over time with your appearing on my show virtually every week. I consider that a regular basis. And, you know, some hosts have a show once a week, and being on five nights a week, it's rare to be able to bring a guest on every week without the subject matter getting stale. And what I see here in talking to scientists and talking to metaphysicians, and let me tell you, there's some good ones. These people are very knowledgeable. You know me, I don't impress very easily, and I am impressed with the quality of people that I have met. Very friendly, very open, very giving, very loving, very sharing, and very conscious, very aware of what's going on. And there is not this tug of war over, you know, the traditional science trying to debunk everything that they can't explain, because it might take a little bit of integrity to actually tap into that information. And you just see it being exercised liberally and naturally, spontaneously, by everybody that I've met. And regardless of age, there are some young, very young people here, and there are some people well up in their years. And
that's a wonderful attribute to discover, but it's not that surprising, because you know as well as I do, Don, from your own sensitivities, that people who have a higher consciousness are the ones who primarily gravitate towards these fields of endeavor to begin with. So
yes.
There are two crackpots, because those people generally filter themselves out in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found over the years, with very few exceptions, that it's a higher quality of spirit, a higher quality of mind, and a higher quality of individual that usually becomes involved with that kind of research, at least in a sincere way. I'm sure
mm-hmm.
there's all kinds of, you know, people who have their own angles, but that's generally not the case in the crowd that I used to associate with. By the way, you know, I used to be a member of the Psychotronics Association many years ago when I lived in the New York area, and
mm-hmm.
the guy who introduced me to it was a fellow by the name of Robert Von Diller. Dr. Von Diller was an amazing individual, very well connected, very, very well read, and very interested in a whole myriad of research activities, a lot of which you could say would be worthy of the attention of the Psychotronics Association. It's a shame, but I think he passed away, because I haven't been able to reach him in a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a fine guy, and I met quite a few people in that organization through him. Of course, I've been out of the New York area for so long now that I've lost touch with them, but I know the kind of people you're rubbing shoulders with, and for the most part, I wouldn't mind being alongside you.
Well, maybe the next time you can. you know,
is it an annual thing, or...?
I'm pretty sure, in fact, I'm being given indication that there are going to be some other types of events, and I will be possibly invited to speak at some. In fact, there is one that's planned, tentatively planned for within the next couple of months, and I will be a featured speaker there. I will be talking about some of the goings on in the higher realms, and a lot of people are very much looking forward to that. So this is a phase of what I'm doing that I see myself expanding in this area. And I know from the amount of activity that I have seen that these people have not done this just once or just once a year. There'll be more discussions tomorrow, I'm sure. I hate to come to the table so ill-prepared in that respect, because it's just mind-blowing what I saw today, and I was dealing with these side issues that I mentioned at the top of the show.
Well, Don, just in a word of support, I doubt very much you'll be ill-prepared. You, like me, have an almost infinite reservoir of material to draw from, and that, coupled with your spiritual and psychic sensitivities, I think you'll do just fine.
Well, thank you. What's interesting now, as I've been able to talk to some people, and we've had some very open conversations about each other, our perceptions of each other, and it's really refreshing to see the flow of energy that's occurring. I've met so many people already since I've been here. And I don't, you know how you meet someone and then you're trying to remember their name 5 seconds later? That's not occurred. That's not occurred once. The level of consciousness is such that there's just this openness right away. It's like in another dimension. It's on another plane. And so I know I'm going to walk away from this just feeling really charged up about a lot of things. And this is going to be solution oriented already, I can tell you. I've not seen anything that's destructive. Everything is a solution. And there's not this struggle between science and metaphysics. And I think that's always been the case with metaphysicians or people coming from the metaphysical realm, is that they're willing to allow anything. Their interests are so deep, and in many cases so non-structured, if that's the term. And many, not all scientists, of course, and it sounds like I'm being unfair in a sense, because most scientists consider themselves to be pure and spontaneous and inventive and creative, but they have to honor the rules that they've been presented. And if some of those rules or those laws in their particular field of expertise are incorrect, then they're going to reflect sort of the prejudice that the other possibilities are not really possibilities because they violate those laws, or they cannot be explained by those laws. You and I have had many, many conversations in that regard. And again,
it's funny that you should bring that up, because just today around noon, I had a very interesting exchange on a three-way telephone conversation with a magnetics engineer. And this is a guy that was very bright. He was extremely capable. He's an officer in a very large corporation that builds products which rely on the physics of magnetism. And he's very willing to believe that there's something outside the box. But the interesting thing was, he's so steeped in his profession and the rules that govern what he does that he no longer knows how to look out, to find his way outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to the guy for an hour and a half, and what the most interesting thing about it was that not only could he not stump me, but conversely, I used my own knowledge of physics and mathematics to demonstrate to him where the avenues of departure exist. And when he finally admitted at the end was that he had never even thought of those things. And this is the interesting thing. Here's a guy that's paid probably a handsome sum of money to investigate all these magnetic phenomena and make use of them on a regular basis, but his mind never went in certain directions. So it's really amazing how much consciousness can affect what's actually right in front of us. You know who said it the best, actually, Don, was Wilhelm Reich. Because Reich said that every individual sees the world differently depending on how much emotional armoring he's carrying. So theoretically, a master, an ascended master, who has no armoring, probably sees a world very, very close to what the Creator intended us to see, and has the ability, no doubt, to look into various matters in a way that we can't comprehend. And then from that level of evolution, we come down the chart to lower and lower and lower graduations until we finally hit the very basement of the whole structure, which is no doubt politicians. But somewhere in between there, you have a very interesting spectrum of consciousness, and I do honestly believe that depending upon your level of development, you see the same world through different eyes, and therefore you perceive things differently as well. So some of these people that just can't see anything more than the old, same old physical world, and they can't, you know, allow themselves to go beyond, you know, any of the traditional trappings. They have no imagination. They can't see any way to go forward. They actually represent a great stumbling block for the rest of our culture. But strangely enough, usually those people are in positions of significant power, which almost seems contradictory. And I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, I got a lot to say, but I don't want to ramble on too long. Let me say this. I had the opportunity to meet someone, and you may be able to relate to this too. You're familiar with Alan J. Hynek, and you know Dr.
Hynek. I know who he is. As a matter of fact, I've interacted with him. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I got to meet the head, the new head of MUFON today, and he was. He was introduced to me by someone that felt that he should know me. Now, keep in mind, I've had Alejandro Rojas on Evident Footprints. He is the International Director of Education and Public Relations for MUFON. And a lot of people have maybe a somewhat accurate impression that when you have a group that's bringing the truth out, the Disclosure Project and these individuals that are now devoting their lives to getting these messages out, they've come to understand and appreciate that the world's problems have been created by a small handful of beings on this planet, and the problem solving has been left to those same individuals. And the groups realize that they have been infiltrated by those that want to keep up with how do we counter this consciousness that's occurring, this unfolding of consciousness or this elevation of consciousness. How do we cope with this? And so I was introduced to the new director, and we began talking, and he asked me, "Do you have any friends in MUFON? Are you a member?" And I said, "Actually, I'm not a member." I said, at the time, I even considered membership in my own state. I couldn't sign up. That's how incompetently it was being run. Well, that serves the powers that be very well. And because their goal is to suppress the growth of any higher consciousness. Quite the contrary, they're trying to point us in the opposite direction as a mass of society. So I started telling him of the people that I know in the group, and then when I mentioned one person, he goes, "Oh, you're the guy that found the crash site on the Cape Girardeau case." He had heard about that investigation that I did back in 2000, only a couple of months after my near-death experience. So you can imagine what kind of energy was flowing through me at that time. And we had a wonderful discussion, and it's going to open up some doors. Of course, these people want to come on the show. They want to get the message out. Every possible place it can be done. This has become like a fever that you can't shake with a lot of these people now. That I say a lot of these people, meaning those serious researchers that are in possession of the information, and they are in also considering the possibilities that could occur if we get a handle on what it is that we have to do, which is basically taking responsibility and then making some choices to change this whole thing, to get outside of the box. So it doesn't surprise me when you hear or when you're talking to someone that's inside the box and you're trying to argue a very elementary point that you know has been tested, has been researched, has been produced, and has results, and they're just every step of the way fighting you that can't even be a possibility. I don't know if I'm answering your question per se, but Hynek was brought up. The issue of Alan J. Hynek was brought up, and we talked about the case where this individual not only had a UFO sighting, they had all kinds of artifacts in their possession. And he had evidence, and many people had seen the evidence. And so Hynek had to explain the pictures and the actual physical evidence that this witness had gathered. And the next day, he came out with the statement. He coined the phrase swamp gas. So, and I like to joke about that from time to time when it's appropriate. I see swamp gas in politics all the time. I can't remember who it was. Someone rather noteworthy made a recent statement, the only swamp gas that exists in the universe is at NASA. I have to tell you, I'm experiencing just an expansion of my own consciousness, just being open to all these different ideas that people have. And the same recurring themes come up, with the exception that no one is giving the government power. No one's saying that they haven't acquired power, that they haven't worked things out, but everybody's talking about love will win out. Consciousness, higher consciousness will win out.
And, well, you know how I feel about that. If that's what they believe, then that's what will happen. It just requires enough individuals thinking that way to reach critical mass, and the rest of them won't have a thing to say about it. And
yes,
that's an absolute fact.
Yes. So, did I answer your question in somehow?
Yeah, you answered my question roundaboutly, but that's fine. I think that your opinion and your feelings about the issue added a lot to it and tilted the perspective in a direction that I didn't anticipate, so that's wonderful. But you made a very interesting comment there about NASA, and if you don't mind, I'd like to interject something interesting. I saw a little blurb on the late news, and you know, it's interesting. Sometimes I'm up some really strange hours, as you know, and if I can't sleep or if I can't accomplish what I'm trying to do, sometimes I'll flip on the TV just to see what's on at that time of day. And I've been very surprised to find out that on C-SPAN, for instance, that's the time when they talk about politically sensitive issues. It's always in the middle of the night, or at least they air it in the middle of the night. And the same is true with unusual news articles that are released.
Yeah.
And the other night, around 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, they had about a 15-minute presentation regarding the fact that the recent discoveries on Mars had blown away a lot of the researchers who couldn't believe that there was so much water there, that there was unusual landforms, and a great deal of evidence suggesting life had been there at one time, and all this kind of stuff. They didn't come to any specific conclusions, but they opened a lot of doors. And I keep asking myself, why the heck do they put that stuff on at 3 o'clock in the morning when nobody's watching it? What's the point in airing it at all? But the thing that excited me when I did see it was, we had talked about all that stuff. We had a whole series of shows months ago that were directed towards that very subject, and then some, for that matter.
Well, that's called damage control on the part of the media. Why is it coming out now?
Well, why is it coming out at 3 o'clock in the morning when nobody's there to watch it?
Well, yeah, damage control, you see, because we've been talking about this, and we've got a lot of people listening to the show, It's posted on my website. It's making the rounds to other websites, and folks are saying, you know, this stuff isn't being debunked. There's nothing to debunk here. They know I'm not taking the photographs. Where are these photographs coming from? Where is this information coming from? And I've been asked on shows, we had this discussion tonight. Someone heard my interview months ago with Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy, and Bill Ryan asked me straight out, point blank, after he had shared a bunch of whistleblower testimony from some very knowledgeable people that really feel that we're being shafted. And he asked me as a follow-up question, I'd be interested in your opinion, Don, or your knowledge of what is going on Mars. And I said, we have been there at least since 1962. We have colonies up there. There's a civilization. There's infrastructure both on the surface and underground. They have a very rapid way to get there. You and I refer to these as dimensional portals. They like to call them stargates. And another word they use are jump gates. In other words, they can take a plane or virtually anything, and they put it in that particular place, and it's gone. They have the chair at Montauk, which was an alien-assisted device that would take one to another place. And they had many, many misunderstandings about time. And now, they don't have a misunderstanding about the optimal time to show something and have it reach the least number of people. That's 3 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning. That's why you're seeing that, is they have some obligation because someone was paid to produce that story. Maybe they were told, okay, you can show it, but you got to show it when your listening audience is the smallest. So it serves a couple of purposes, because it makes us think that they're being honest with us to see such a rogue topic being discussed on C-SPAN, for example. Why don't they do that with the Senate hearings? Now they're having these closed-door Senate meetings. This is ramping up. This is happening more frequently all the time. What are they hiding from us? Why are they so intent upon keeping us from knowing what their business is when they're supposed to be representing us? Well, we've figured out that they're not representing us. They're representing themselves. So what they do is always a representation of how it serves them and not us. That's why you see that stuff at 3 o'clock in the morning. And a watered-down version, too, right?
Oh, yeah, it was greatly watered down. But there was still a certain amount of excitement, to see it shown, since you and I had made several presentations about the very same topic in even more detail months earlier. And it was almost like we were a much better source of information than they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what's interesting now, because there are some people here, I've walked into a group, basically, that has existed, prior to me coming on the scene. Although they rapidly can recognize that my coming on the scene recently has nothing to do with what I know and what I bring to the table. That's being honored. And so these discussions open up, and I've had several people bring up the fact that they've listened to you on this show, and they've listened to your science. They're familiar with some of your inventions, and they're familiar with your associations in the scientific world, and that's being, you're not even here, and you're being talked about, which is kind of cool. I've heard your name more than I've heard Tesla's.
No, you're kidding. Well, that's interesting. I hope I can live up to it, Don. That's all.
Well, and the fact that you are out there looking for the information, at least you're looking to see what they're willing to tell us. But it's no surprise. I flat out said what I thought about Mars, and I've been proven to be correct. I've been proven, you know, we have an archive of that show. Now, I recently heard someone else, I'm not even going to mention the name, but I heard someone else actually take credit for bringing that very information out the first time. And I can go back a year and produce an audio file that shows otherwise. So you've got some people out there in the movement that are more intent on building a reputation for themselves and finding out, you know, how many people are going to follow them, and they'll make misrepresentations. We've had people steal other people's materials throughout history. That's where the word theft came from.
But that kind of stuff doesn't bother me because, quite honestly, there's an infinite reservoir of information to be had, and the more you give away, the more you get.
Mm-hmm.
That's a basic truth in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that's one of the reasons why, and I'm not trying to blow my own horn, but I'll tell you, I learned a long time ago that it doesn't pay to be paranoid in these types of investigations, because you only wind up propelling yourself directly into the ensnarements of the system.
Mm-hmm.
The whole patenting scheme and all the legal nonsense that goes along with that is all designed to entrap and snare and filter information from paranoid inventors. I think the new wave that's coming is that there's a realization that even if you don't get immensely wealthy like some of these huge corporations, it's better for information to be universally disseminated so that it can be made use of by all of mankind than it is to hoard it and wind up feeding the system we all despise.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, it's important to realize none of us who receive pure inspiration can take credit for any of that. The true psychic inventor is nothing more than a refined type of medium that happens to be focusing on various scientific endeavors. Therefore, the information he receives is given freely by the universe with the expectation that it be used for the betterment of all people. And that's absolutely 180 degrees out of phase with the way large developmental corporations behave, as we all know.
Mm-hmm. Or you know, the individual that will claim that their presentation or the information that's coming out is the very first time that this has been, you know, you're hearing this for the first time on the planet, and I'm coming out with it, and I'm saying to myself, well, you just ruined any credibility you had with me right now, because you're now sharing my material or someone else's material and claiming it as your own, and we know this. It's like you said, it's not about tooting my own horn. It's about why even offer that fact? When you and I discussed those Mars photos, we attributed the photos and the source of the photos in two opportunities. We attributed where we got those photos, and we attributed how that person got the photos. I never said, well, I'm the first guy on the planet that's got, you know, these Mars photos. But I have some interesting Mars photos that other people didn't have, and those are posted on my site with alien writing. Now, am I the first person to have those photos? I would say probably not. Am I the first person to post them on my website? Maybe. Maybe. But, and what is the alien writing? Believe it or not, it's basically like a catalog number. For them, for their purposes, it's like a catalog. But it says many, many things about this whole phenomenon. And on the one hand, they're saying, you know, that Well, they're making some mistakes, or they have to start now thinking outside the box because they're finding scientific data. Well, it's rather embarrassing when you've spent hundreds of billions of dollars or even trillions of dollars in going to the moon and you're not willing to share the information of what is up on the moon or on Mars or any planet, then we have to question what the agenda is for that secrecy and why is it that we have to pay for the privilege of being left out of where our money's going. Why is that? There seems to be some kind of disconnect there with the normal process of logic, basic logic. If you buy a lottery ticket and they call the winning numbers, you should be able to show them that you have the winning ticket if those numbers are on your ticket. But it's as though they enable themselves to win the lottery and they're not going to disclose the numbers. Maybe it's not the best example in the world, but that's basically what's going on in every aspect of everything on this planet. The food, medicine, the oil industry. I mean, they're lying about oil. They're lying about what the nature of pharmaceuticals is. They're lying about what they put in our food. They're lying about what they're spraying in the air. They're lying about the laws that they create. And they're lying about the economic system. Everything is a lie. Where do you expect these people to start telling the truth? And why should we? Why should we even pay attention to them anymore? I'm at that place right now.
Well, frankly, I've been there for quite some time because you just can't, you can't afford to plug into that nonsense. If you really want to make some kind of progress, you have to have one foot on the planet just so that you can share the momentum of that orb or that world. But you actually have to have one foot off the planet also.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to shift your consciousness back and forth just enough to keep yourself guided. But for the most part, plug into higher sources. Plug into, the divine mind that has designed all this stuff. If you get too embroiled in that other garbage, you get sucked down to a level that you don't want to be at.
Exactly. So now we have to question also the nature, not just why do they show it at 3 o'clock in the morning on C-SPAN? Why is it not shown where more people can see it? Well, why are they showing it at all?
That's what I said earlier. It's
yeah.
Almost ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm just recapitulating what you said, because after all the things I said and all the things you said, we come back into that vicious circle again. We have to step outside the box, and we have to start looking at really what is going on.
Well, what's really going on is even worse than that, because if you really stop and think about it, not only do they make all of these scientific achievements and whatnot using our money and then not tell us about them, but they go a step further, and they actually engender situations that they can use against us in any number of ways, and they do that with our money also, which is even more incredible when you stop and think of it.
Yeah. Not that this is a big shift in direction, but I wanted to mention to you, when you have a chance, go to Ken Adachi's website, educate-yourself.org. He posted a new photo. He actually got several new photos of an object photographed in the night sky, and it looks like a biological robot in this, with a laser lens or a laser weapon on each end, sort of like a worm or a leech or something of that nature, out in space. Very large, and this thing is just changing shape from one color to another and one length to another length. The direction of how this thing bends and twists changes from moment to moment. And it was taken from a series of rapid-fired still photographs. And when it was being photographed, the person couldn't see these changes taking place. But when they got the photographs up on a computer screen and enlarged them, you can see this thing is changing shape. Now, I had seen a craft like that in 2004. There was a major sighting all across north central Ohio for hours. It was the better part of a day and night that this was photographed by police agencies. They scrambled jets from an Air Force base in Michigan to chase this thing, and it was an L-shaped light bar is the best way I could describe it. It wasn't a candy cane pattern, but it was more like a light bar type of pattern. And it was at first shaped like an L in the sky, upright, just like you would write it on a piece of paper. And it went from orange to blue to green to red, each segment moving down the L. And then as you move across with it, some of these patterns were repeated or they were mixed up differently. And this thing morphed into different shapes. It's very, very interesting how much the sighting existed of some of the same anomalies that Ken Adachi was given in these photographs. But Ken has it posted on latest articles. You click on, when you go to educate-yourself.org, you click on current news, and then that will take you to this page where he's got all his most recent postings. And the latest articles page is the one you want to take a look at. I would be very interested in your appraisal of what is going on in those photographs.
Well, I'll be happy to take a look at it. Just for my own edification, when are you coming back from Chicago?
Well, I'll be back in the next couple of days. So,
all right. So I can definitely talk to you before the next show.
Okay. Oh, yeah. There'll be plenty of time for us to talk about it.
By the way, Don, not that I want to put any excessive burdens on you, but if you see any material that you think that I would be interested in, I'd really appreciate it if you'd snag a catalog or at least write down some titles or something so that I could have some way of following up on it in due course.
I'm already doing that.
Oh, well. Bless your heart. Thank you.
So, yeah, and in fact, I wanted to share it with tonight's listening audience just for that purpose that not only am I going to be bringing some of this material forward, but I will also be bringing some of the authors and the scientists forward. These people have a very, very profound message to share with humanity, and it's time that this stuff comes out. And it is coming out. There are many of the people I met have already been on Coast to Coast several times. Now, they've not yet been on Evident Footprints, but the interesting energy is that they're looking forward to that opportunity. They're clamoring for that opportunity. So I'm mildly impressed by that. That we must be doing something good, that so many people can feel that they want to be a part of what we're doing. I think it would be interesting, too, at some point, maybe once a month or once every couple of months, to have a roundtable discussion with several scientists or get the metaphysicians and the scientists together, and let's do a roundtable show.
Oh, I think that would be great. As a matter of fact, to be honest with you, that's one of those special occasions when you would almost want to schedule a two-hour show.
Oh, because
you know as well as I do that you can't get that kind of thing started and then stop it on a dime. That's gonna have a life of its own once it gets going, Don.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm quite clear on that. That especially when you have that number, any number of people over two, you have to start allowing for people to have enough time to express their point, whatever it is. If it's a feeling or if it's data or, they want to share something private with us. Everybody's got a different way of doing it. And the bottom line is we're trying to represent the truth and show people that there are possibilities beyond what we've been conditioned to believe, and you can know these things and you can move forward and create a new reality. It's not just about inventing things, it's about creation. And the I know when you've created something that works, and it works every time, you get pretty darn excited about it. And then you take on your next challenge, and you go to a higher place. You don't go back and reinvent the wheel just because it would be easy.
Well, no, the thing about that that's really incredible, and I remember reading about it before I actually experienced it. But when I experienced it, it was such an incredible, I don't know how to express it, really. It was just an incredible feeling and a verification of what I had read, you know, that I never forgot it. But basically what it comes down to is you can start off in any direction investigating something. I don't care what it is, whether it's metaphysical, psychic, mental, scientific, whatever. And once you get to a certain point with your research, the most amazing thing happens. Instead of you pushing to establish momentum and progress in this direction, the subject matter begins to pull you in.
Mm-hmm.
And it not only does it suck you into the vortex of what you have established with your initial efforts, but it also oftentimes steers you in directions that you never would have dreamt. And you wind up going in these very incredible adventures if you allow the process to continue. And you almost inevitably will make a new discovery of some sort. And
well,
then you can take a breath and do it all over again, Don.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing that very thing you're describing with my genealogical research. It's amazing how you know, your first hunch is probably the most accurate one. And you set it aside and you go about proving something. You know, it's almost like you see the end of the tunnel, or, you know, you see the goal, and you say, okay, if that's real, I've got to see how to get there. Now, I think the thing you can do, the worst injustice you can do to your own research, whatever kind it is to presume that your first thought was the only thought, and that your results have to reflect that is valid. That was the sort of thing that that Tesla used to gripe about all the time, is that the people that didn't understand the science would come up with results that supposedly represented the only possibility. and he saw the error in the whole process, not to mention the data. So in that respect, I guess I'm striving to prove something, or to discover, let's say, is a better word. I'm not, you know, proving sometimes is defending, or it's taking a polarity stance, a polarized stance. In the process of manifesting the facts that support my first hunch, I've learned to forget that was a hunch, and go upon the mission of discovering facts. And when you don't have a grounding point, a place to put your feet, to stand on some concept, it's a really strange way to research. But what I found is that automatically facilitates the natural process of letting the universe suck you into itself. Well, like you described, when you stop the effort. And I would find that if I was trying to justify my hunch by looking for facts that justify that it's I'm either not going to find them or I would have to fabricate them to try to make it look like that. That's pointless. That serves no purpose, and at least not mine. And so in an effort to establish who a person is or where they're from or when they came to be, which should be a pretty simple process of honesty on everybody's part, but that's not the case, I'm forced to use unorthodox methods to come up with that data. But it's like you said, when you stop struggling, it comes. And when it does, it's a flood of information.
Yeah, but you know what? The struggling part or the effort part is part of the formula in the beginning, because I have analyzed my own efforts in this regard and the results. And you know, it's really very interesting because it imitates very closely the behavior of an electromagnetic inductor. If you're trying to push a current through an inductor, in the very beginning, when that magnetic field starts to expand as a result of a current motion, Lenz reaction dictates that there's going to be a force which opposes that current. And the harder you push, the more it opposes you. And yet, when you finally get to a point where you say, okay, I'm done pushing, I'm going to relax now. Well, when you relax, the opposite happens. As that field collapses, it generates a voltage which helps to accelerate the very current you attempted to establish in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps it going. And so, you know, it's another wonderful example of how the Creator has established laws which apparently operate in octaves. You know, on the very fundamental level, I'm sure you can see the behavior of a similar behavior like I just described and attributed to an inductor. You can also see that in the behavior of gross mechanical objects because of the laws of inertia. Then you go to the electrical realm and you see this behavior occurring in an electromagnetic way.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it also happens in the spiritual or in the mental and spiritual way. So it's really interesting that the same laws are used over and over again, and they just operate in different mediums.
Yeah. Well, you know, all this stuff ties together, too. That's another important point here before we call it a night. We have a tendency, and it's done to us and done for us, but not for our behalf. It's done for their behalf. And that's this this particular attention that's focused on the physical, and then the reaction of others through the mental as to their physical perceptions. The physical being the lowest of the planes of our consciousness, and I'm not disqualifying subconsciousness or unconsciousness, but in terms of what we see, you know, people have been taught just to observe what they see with their eyes and not to conceive beyond what is present. This has been a theme for the past couple of weeks. And here I am again moving into that concept of the illusion. Yet when we look at it from the opposite side, like you were just saying, if I look at it from instead of the time-space continuum, if I were to look at it from the space-time continuum, it's got to be different. Especially if there is no time in space, then the space-time continuum is really not a continuum at all, other than it's a perpetual state of no time, or a liberated, maybe a liberated physicality and a spirituality in relation to time. So we've kind of got it backwards, I think. And someone along the line figured out, okay, if you want to keep the sheeple from knowing what's going on, let's present it to them in the opposite order. they'll never arrive, you know, at the goal. It's sort of like starting the mouse at the end of the maze, and having one-way doors that will only open a certain way, you know. So he's going to be headed the wrong way the first time he comes to a door. He's going to think it's a solid wall and that he can't go through it. And that's kind of what they've done to us in terms of our reality and how we perceive it. They're telling us what we see, and they're telling us how to see it, and they're telling us when to see it. Basically, they're giving us permission to see it or to not see it. And we are giving them permission to do that to us.
Yeah, well, that's where I don't know how to explain this eloquently, but I have to say that that's where the rebel in me has been most useful. Because, you know, when I was a kid, we don't have to go into it. You know that I was a very contrary individual.
Yeah.
And I have mellowed a great deal over the years. But the interesting thing is that the basic attitude that I had as a youngster has been preserved in some way and modified to serve a purpose. And there's no way I will give anybody permission to guide me around by the nose. It'll never happen. I prefer to fall flat on my face, make my own mistakes, and learn from them than to surrender my individuality and my authority to some bozo who doesn't know anything more than I do. As a matter of fact, he probably knows a heck of a lot less. But for some reason, the human race has always had a tendency to do that. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a little bit rebellious, at least to the point of preserving your individuality and having the nerve to explore your own beliefs and establish your own perimeters without having somebody else tell you what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's it in the nutshell, and we can get into microchipping or vaccines, mandatory vaccines, and all the fear-mongering and all the misrepresentations of fact as to the reality of our natural resources and our wealth and our success and all these things. They don't mean diddly squat when the light of the truth is shined upon them. Now, Winfrey recently made a comment and said, one thing you have to remember is the brighter the light, the longer the shadow it casts.
That's true.
Yes, it is. It's a very profound statement. And from a perspective of higher consciousness, how can the body or the mind know the realm of the higher energies if it can't tune into it? The only way that it can access those realms is through the spirit. And so the spirit, by definition, rules over the mind and the body in that respect. Now, it's quite possible that you can make the body rule over the mind and the spirit by through ignorance and by doing the opposite of what it was intended to do, which is why you have so many addictions and so many vices and so many aberrations from what is good. In a person, they have successfully separated the spirit from the mind and the body. But the spirit rules in reality. And when all is said and done, the spirit's all that's left at the end of one's life, whatever length of time that might be. Spirit is all that is left, and therefore the focus on the body and the focus on the mind in that respect, in the respect of spirit, is useless or pointless. If that's where you're going in the end, why don't we recognize that? Maybe all our answers to what we seek outside of ourselves from others are found within us, and just realizing that basic simple fact. If the spirit is all that really matters in the long run, then why are we not nurturing the spirit?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that first of all, people are out of touch with their own spirits most of the time. And also, there's this really bizarre tendency that most people have, at least in the Western world, and that is that I don't care what religion they have, if you really question them in depth, they have a lot of doubt about the continuity of some form of consciousness after death. And as a result of that, you know, they may hedge their bets by embracing a particular religion, and that's fine. But because there are doubts about whether or not there is a continuum after death, the tendency is to embrace what you know now. And not only that, but the tendency is there also to say, well, I'm going to get as much out of this life as I can now, just in case there's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Or just in case the next experience is radically different, or I won't like it, or whatever argument they might present to themselves. That's one of the reasons why I was so fascinated with death research, you know, early in my career, and we've discussed those various adventures on some of your shows, because I always felt there must be something, there must be some way that you can breach this incredible void and demonstrate, you know, to the satisfaction of most people that there is something else that continues on. If that was done successfully and properly presented to the world at large, you have no idea what kind of a change there would be. I mean, it would definitely make an enormous difference. But it's interesting to note that those same characters that are in charge of everything and who direct research and supply money for various things, they never go in a direction like that. They're always looking for better weapons to destroy more people, more efficient ways of killing, and more ways to screw you out of your dollar. You know.
Yeah, I think what is occurring to me in the context of everything we talked about on tonight's show, Jim, is that regardless of what choices we make, there is an energy shift that's taking place. And I could best describe it as two waves of opposite polarity about to clash into each other, and some aspects of these cycles will intermingle with other aspects of the same cycles in the other source. Let's picture one operating the left and one operating from the right, or representing the left and the right. These two waves are about to clash into each other, and I don't care if you consider them to be sound waves or electromagnetic waves or water waves or what. At the point where they collide, there will be an equal and opposite reaction, and there will be possibly an inversion, not to mention subharmonics or supraharmonics that will take place, creating more of the same waves with the same potential at some point in time to again invert. Now, my understanding is that quite possibly this occurs every 26,000 years or so. And so we are going through another cycle, so we can trust that Al Gore invented the internet, or we can trust that he invented global warming. What's the next thing he's going to invent? The internet's gotten pretty screwed up, and so has global warming. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, he's 0 for 2 on that count. But when the effect of these forces is going to be such that that which moves from time and space, or from that realm, is, or time-space continuum, we'll call it, will all of a sudden be inverted to be space-time. And so we'll be liberated merely because there really is no such time in space in that sense. Not like on Earth, not like in the third dimension. So this will be, by rule, it should be a dimensional shift. If our plane of consciousness is moving in a downward spiral, and these energies clash, one of those wave forms has to move in an upward spiral. Wouldn't you guess?
Well, absolutely. The phenomenon that you're describing is known as reinforcement or cancellation. So some of these effects are going to superimpose in such a way that they reinforce one another, and some of them are going to overlap in such a way that they cancel each other out.
Mm-hmm.
So from the standpoint of consciousness and evolution and the trends that develop in society, when a clash like this occurs, there's going to be a lot of interesting changes. Some are going to represent journeys to higher plateaus of consciousness, and apparently some things are going to just get wiped out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think this is something to fear. I think actually one's salvation, if anybody's looking to get saved, to recognize that all you have to do is see the process that's occurring, that might just be enough right there. Because if you see it happening, there's no reason to panic. There's no justification in panic or fear. And so just allow the process to happen. We are not in positions to be able to stop that from happening.
Oh, so it's absolutely pointless. Not. I think it's a basic trend of nature. And it's interesting that you picked the number of 26,000, because I think a great year is like 25,400 and something years, and it represents the time period that it takes the Earth's axis to do one precessional orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's referred to as a grand year or a great year. And, 26,000 years ago, there are actually a lot of parallels, by the way. 26,000 years ago, Atlantis was still the main focus of cultural and technological development on the planet. And the interesting thing about it is it passed on and disappeared, but I see a lot of parallels between the way Atlantis was just before its demise and the way the world is today, especially the United States. And I don't know that that's a coincidence, because I think people have karma, and so do nations. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if these trends reemerge and have to go through similar cycles until all the individuals involved learn something.
Mm-hmm.
So, when Casey started talking about Atlantis rising, he may not have necessarily meant those ruins off of Bimini. He may have meant that the whole darn process was about to reoccur, or something very similar was about to reoccur.
Mm-hmm. I was going to add that this came up in another show recently. It might have been Wednesday's show with Win Free, that Jesus said that the meek shall inherit the earth. And so, in a sense, he's recognizing what you and I have just been talking about, these inversions of frequencies or these clashes of these frequencies, to where they're going to take on a new characteristic, a new predominance. And, he said the wealthy are going to be reduced to nothing, and that those that have been without their whole lives are going to become the wealthy. But with the understanding, I think what's going to happen with this is not just a great state for everybody that's been a loser and a horrible demise for those that have been repressing everyone else their whole existence, but this is going to be an opportunity for anyone to recognize what's happening and just go with it. Allow it to happen rather than to interfere with it. And,
I agree with you, and I think it's the same as any natural law.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really interfere with stuff like that. When it's going to happen, it's going to happen. You have to be smart enough to recognize that it's some sort of cosmic trend. It isn't just a geopolitical thing. You know, so if you want to fight it, that's fine, but it won't get you anywhere. You're further ahead to say, well, let's concentrate on this and see where it's leading and what the ramifications might be and where do I want to position myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we can pick this up in a sense next week, and as I accumulate brochures and more information and that at the expo here, I'll be able to share that with you, and we'll be able to share that with our listening audience and have some interesting discussions here, because we're at a point now I think we should start creating. We definitely can be in a creational mode now. And I think,
fine with me. I'll be happy to do anything that will promote that type of activity on Earth. You know that.
Yes. Okay. Well, Jim, you have, as usual, been a pleasure to interview and carry on these discussions from the higher realms. And I look forward to next week's show and being able to get you some of this information that I'm picking up. And so I wish you and the listening audience a great weekend, and look forward to the next time.
Well, very good, Don. I appreciate that. And God willing, I will be back for another session next Friday evening, and let's explore some other exciting things.
Okay, so we'll say good night to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. Our guest tonight, Mr. Jim Murray, and he will be back next week. A special thanks to Don Newsom and Nicholas on the sound. Now we've got two Dons. We've got a Nikoloff and a Nicholas. It's getting interesting. So I wish everyone out there a great weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light. And have a good night.